Hi, I'm Jacqueline Kinser, and for the past 5 years, I've been helping families all around the globe to overcome their breastfeeding challenges. And this is the first non-clinical breastfeeding podcast that shows you how to rock breastfeeding and master motherhood through practical tips, mindset shifts, and honest conversation to create a confident and empowering breastfeeding journey. This is the Breastfeeding Talk Podcast.
Hello. Thank you all for being here today. I have the lovely Jacqueline Kinser with me. She is the founder and CEO of Holistic Lactation, where she runs a telehealth breastfeeding practice, manufactures herbal supplements for lactation, and supports breastfeeding families worldwide through an online course and community called the Nurture Collective. She's also the host of the top-rated podcast, Breastfeeding Talk. Jacqueline's passion has been to create functional breastfeeding outcomes and expand access to lactation knowledge and support across the globe. As a mother of two who struggled with her own breastfeeding experiences, she understands the multifaceted challenges today's families face. Through a holistic lens that accounts for mental health, financial barriers, systemic injustices, inadequate policies, and unrealistic expectations, Jacqueline strives to help moms recognize the many ways that they can breastfeed their babies and define their own success by making breastfeeding work for them. Thank you so much for being here today, Jacqueline. It's such a pleasure to connect with you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Allie, and thank you for everyone who's attending to come and get this important information.
Yeah. Can you share a little bit about how you got into this work?
Absolutely. probably like a lot of people, I was a stockbroker and loved my job. I was great at it. And I became pregnant with our first child. I went through a birth class that was really, you know, long and intensive, read a lot of things about pregnancy and birth to prepare myself. And then he was born and I realized I didn't really know much about breastfeeding. I actually did take a prenatal breastfeeding class, but that class was really focused on like the health benefits of breastfeeding. It was really kind of all of the, you know, best practices of breastfeeding, if you will, like latch the baby in the first hour after birth, but it wasn't like how to latch the baby or really what to do if there are problems or what it realistically can look like. And I felt really unprepared. And I tried my hardest to find a good lactation consultant to help me, and they really weren't available. When I finally did see one, she assured me that everything was going great, despite my nipples being bruised and scabbing and bleeding. Aww. And I was in an incredible amount of pain. So fast forward to me, you know, persevering through breastfeeding, basically never stopped researching what was wrong and how to fix it. I joined La Leche League as a member. I got really involved in that because having that support, being around other moms who were breastfeeding, seeing that it wasn't always perfect for everybody was everything to me. And I felt like I had to work so hard to even find out that that was something that existed and it shouldn't be that way. Why did my doctor not prepare me? Why did my midwife not say anything? Why did the pediatrician not have some recommendations for me? And so I just thought, you know, if I'm struggling this much, I cannot be the only one. So I got really passionate about, you know, giving back and serving my community and being there to support them in breastfeeding and not just support them, but give them the support that they desperately need and deserve.
I love that. And I didn't even know that you had done La Leche League or anything like that, but that was like such a catalyst as like part of my breastfeeding journey too. And just, you know, what you said is just like seeing what is normal and like being with other moms and like that are also nursing was so foundational for my like breastfeeding journey. And just, I love that this has just like taken you, you know, like you said, I just never stopped learning or asking why. And now you have an entire business devoted to this. It's so fun. One thing that I love that you say is that breastfeeding is a vital sign, and I would love to unpack that with you. But before we even get to that, can we step back even a step further and clarify or maybe define what even a vital sign is?
Good question. In the medical field, it's really going to be something like your height, your weight, your pulse, blood pressure, oxygen levels, those sorts of things. You know, really basic data on what's going on in the human body. So when I say breastfeeding is a vital sign, you know, I'm looking at it through this lens of like, if breastfeeding is not going well, that's an indicator of a lot of other things, typically health problems. Not always though. So maybe I've expanded the definition of vital sign over the years. But truthfully, it really can be. It can be a breathing issue with the baby, and not in the sense that they're going to stop breathing at any given moment, but they're definitely not breathing optimally, right? If a baby can't feed in the way that they are biologically meant to, in the way that their DNA has programmed them to, by virtue of us being mammals and having mammary glands and lactating, and milk is supposed to be produced once we birth the placenta from our female bodies, like if that isn't happening, something is definitely wrong with, you know, your body, your baby's body, something. And it doesn't mean that you're ruined or it's not possible to breastfeed or something like that. But if we didn't have all of the modern conveniences and innovations that we have of formula, of pumping, of all of these other things, if your baby can't breastfeed, they would die. And so why are we not looking at breastfeeding as this other vital sign? Like if a human infant cannot feed and you know, make itself survive, something's really, really wrong. And I wish that we took that more seriously as a culture and a society, because again, we have all of these other things we can rely on, which are amazing and absolutely needed. But I think there's a difference between relying on those things or, you know, expecting to use those alternative methods. And, you know, that's separate from personal choice. You know, when I look at it through, you know, being a healthcare provider as a lactation consultant. If I'm assessing someone's overall well-being and I can see that the baby is struggling to breastfeed or the mom is struggling to lactate, like, okay, something's wrong and I'm going to find out what that root cause, what that root issue is, and not just say, okay, well, you can use a nipple shield or you can pump or you can give formula. You know, it's always guided by whatever that, you know, family is choosing, but from a clinical lens, something's just, you know, definitely wrong.
I love that that's your approach of just like, this is actually like the natural process. And if it isn't like happening, like let's dig in and figure out what that root cause is and helping to alleviate that. Would you say that like, if I just like as a regular, you know, mom woman walked into, you know, my midwife or my OBGYN's office, or even maybe my pediatrician's, and I said like, well, like breastfeeding is like a vital sign. Is that something that like, you would say, I'm assuming you have pioneered this, but like, would they agree? Or is that something where I would have to sort of like educate them a little bit and say like, no, like something's not right because this should be like a natural process.
That's a good question. I would say 99% of the time you would really need to educate them, because I don't even think they have, you know, unless someone's gone above and beyond out of personal interest to do it, they don't have the training and the education as part of, you know, their credential that they've achieved to even really know how to assess breastfeeding or lactation and whether or not it's going well. So that would be like, they would look at you like you had two heads if you said something like that to them, because they would go, well, but the baby's breathing and growing and all of these things. And I'm like, yeah, but the baby can't eat without some, you know, industrialized form of having it feed, which is fine. But like, if that's not what that mom wants, right? And, you know, then we have to look at, you know, what's going on. And they wouldn't know how to assess it. And they really wouldn't know how to fix it. Most of the time, it's just a, you know, well, if the baby can't nurse, then we'll give them a bottle. Like that's generally the solution. If you go to your OB and say something about you're struggling with oversupply or undersupply, or you're having clogged ducts or mastitis or whatever it is, other than sending you a prescription for antibiotics, like they're really not going to know what to do to help you. They might say that, you know, you could try pumping. They may on rare occasion tell you to work with a lactation consultant, but otherwise they really aren't going to have any kind of advice or guidance for you regarding that. So it's frustrating because I'm like, hey, exist in a vacuum as lactation consultants. We're supposed to be part of the entire healthcare team. The problem is that as much as we include that whole team, they generally leave us out, don't know we exist, don't really take it upon themselves to learn much about what it is that we even do. So it's frustrating, not just for me, but all of my colleagues, but especially moms out there, because they're looking for this person that they've trusted with their care for however long to guide them. And if they're not referring to a lactation consultant, you may not know we exist, and you may not even think that that's something that's helpful to you because your doctor didn't mention it.
Yes, all of that, like 100%. And I want to ask you about, I wasn't even planning to ask you this, but now I'm curious because of what you just said is like, you know, a lot of times when women give birth, especially like in the hospitals, there'll be like a lactation consultant or like a nurse that, you know, can help you with nursing or whatever. And, I'm curious what your thoughts are on, you know, kind of like the OB and pediatricians of just like, if you are struggling with nursing, do you recommend basically relying on those avenues, or is it in your best interest like to make sure that you have a lactation consultant on your team? And the reason I brought up the hospital like lactation consultant is to me, especially as like a first-time mom, a lot of people don't realize that like a postpartum nurse who is a lactation consultant can just become a lactation consultant from like going to like a seminar or something. Like she's not necessarily like an IBCLC. And so to me, I always say like, find a lactation consultant and get them on your, like know who you want to go to, or at least have a couple people local to you. But, do you feel like that is something that people should be seeking out even before baby has arrived? And like, you know, do you think that that correlation between the IBCLC is actually as imperative as just knowing, you know, any sort of lactation counselor on, you know, that you could access?
That's a really, really good question. And a really important one too, because, you know, there's IBCLCs, right? So that's International Board Certified Lactation Consultant. That is the only lactation credential or certification that makes someone a healthcare provider in the field of lactation. So unless you have, you know, an RN, MD, something else in addition to that, right? You're not a healthcare provider unless you have your IBCLC. We have supervised clinical hours that we're required to do. We sit for board exams and we recertify on a regular basis. We're required to have, you know, X amount of continuing education hours every 5 years. You're required to have actual clinical practice hours that you submit to the board on an ongoing basis. So there's this oversight and training that happens. We have at minimum 300 supervised clinical hours, sometimes as much as 1,000, depending on which pathway we took to get there. So for me, it was 1,000, but it took quite a while. Now there's CLCs, CLECs, CBS, there's all these other, you know, people that are not lactation consultants, but sometimes will be mistakenly called that, or they will use the title lactation consultant, which is really not appropriate or correct. And they have generally taken something like a 45-hour course, maybe 50, 60 hours. They don't have supervised clinical training. They don't have any clinical experience. They definitely don't have a clinical background or education. So they can counsel you on the normal course of breastfeeding. They can provide education to you about the benefits of breastfeeding, general breastfeeding things, maybe, you know, problems to look out for, but they're supposed to be referring you to an IBCLC if you come to them and say that you have a breastfeeding problem. So they are not to weigh your baby. They're not to assess. They're certainly not to be telling you if your baby has a tongue tie or not. Many of these people completely practice outside of their scope, and it's a real nightmare for, honestly, families. Like it just, because you're confused, right? If you don't know all of those nuances coming into this, and you're like, oh yeah, she's an LC. Well, what is that? You know, is she an IBCLC? Is she a CLC? Right. And it's not always intentional, but I have absolutely seen people intentionally misrepresent themselves. So then if we're talking about the hospital context, very often there will be an IBCLC or maybe more than one that is on staff at that hospital. But even more often than that, there's usually an RN who has something like a CLC or, you know, one of these other types of like 50-hour classes and, you know, some training like that, right? They may not even have an official class that they've taken and gotten a certificate for. They just have done some sort of continuing education. So sadly, most of the time in the hospital setting, you know, families are expecting to see a lactation consultant that is well-trained and all of that. A lot of times that's not what you're going to get. Also, while your hospital might have a lactation consultant on staff, they may not be there when you give birth. So very often they're not on weekends. Hospitals tend to not put these people on salary. So they will hire them kind of per diem so that they don't have to give them benefits and all of these other things. And so it's just, it's really iffy. Like if you, you know, deliver in the middle of the night, you're probably not going to get help until they show up for their shift the next morning, that sort of thing. So hospital budgets generally don't really make an effort to include IVCLCs. So it's tough. If you are lucky enough to get someone and you're lucky enough to get somebody who's good, amazing, right? Like, that's incredible. There are good ones out there. So I would just say it's really the minority, unfortunately. I do have a really good connection with a lot of my colleagues who are in the hospital. Maybe some of them even do private practice in addition, and they can always, you know, be the ones to really tell you that they're so limited by one, the time that they're allowed to spend in patients' rooms, right? They'll get written up for, you know, spending too long with you. So like more than 15 minutes is generally frowned upon. That's really frustrating because a newborn is not going to be done feeding in 15 minutes. If they can't get them to latch in that time, they kind of have to leave and go on and see the next person. And so when I talk to moms about this kind of stuff, especially, you know, prenatal visits and whatnot, I always try to tell them, hey, like, please don't. I mean, there are, you know, just like doctors, right? There's good and there's bad. You know, maybe you don't get a good lactation consultant, but please give this person, if you are lucky enough to see them, the benefit of the doubt. They're not personally dismissing you if they're not staying in your room for very long or if they only come to see you once while you're at the hospital. Chances are they're limited by policies. They also generally are completely banned from even mentioning tongue tie or lip tie. So a lot of parents will leave the hospital super frustrated. They see someone like me and they're like, why didn't anybody tell me? Why didn't they check? And I'm like, well, your lactation consultant in the hospital was probably told if they ever bring that up, they're going to get fired. So there's all these politics that get in the way of families getting good care. And you really shouldn't, it shouldn't be that way. Like you should immediately have support, someone that's there hands-on with you. You can watch all the videos you want while you're pregnant about how to latch a baby until that baby is in your arms and you're doing it for the first time. Like you really, you have no clue. You can practice with a doll and, you know, whatever ahead of time. It is not the same as latching a baby in real life. And there's just a lot to it. So I would encourage people to answer your question. I would really encourage people to, if not, meet with an IVCLC while you're pregnant, or it could be a really good like CLC or something like that, where you want to get that education, that counseling, right? Make sure they're connected to resources in your community. If you do need an IVCLC or what have you, if you think that you might be predisposed to some breastfeeding or lactation problems, definitely see an IVCLC ahead of time. If that's a health condition you think might interfere, or you've breastfed in the past and it didn't work out, or family history of breastfeeding not going well, see that IVCLC while you're pregnant. And then you have an established relationship so that when baby comes, they can see you quickly, help you right away. So I would really recommend that if you're serious about breastfeeding going well, and you want to understand how to know if your baby is getting enough, how to return to work successfully and maintain milk production. If you have long-term breastfeeding goals, if you have maybe a history of breast surgery or a chronic health condition or something like that, that you think might make it harder for you, get that support ahead of time. Because the last thing you want to do is be in that immediate postpartum period and struggling. And maybe you have so much going on. It's like too much to even go and look for and find and schedule getting that support.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much. That was like so comprehensive, but yeah, I just can't recommend that enough for you guys. If you are kind of like what Jacqueline said, like if you know that you want to breastfeed or you know, might have issues, like just be proactive because there's so many great outlets for support ahead of time. Kind of to your point, like you don't need to get, it doesn't have to be horrible and you don't have to like grit and bear through it. So, okay. One thing that you mentioned kind of just in passing as we were starting our conversation was, the health benefits of to mom when she breastfeeds. And obviously when we think about nursing, it has a mom's part, but a lot of us think about baby's benefit. And I just remember learning, when I was becoming a mom, like, oh my gosh, I should breastfeed as long as possible because this is like incredible for my own body. Can you share a little bit about what those health benefits are for mom and long-term and all things?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that really goes unnoticed a lot of the time, right? People think, I've asked like my followers on social media occasionally, like, hey, why do you breastfeed? What's your motivation? And it's usually, the health benefits for my baby. And I'm like, that's awesome. Whatever motivates you, right? But I'm like, did you know that there are benefits for you too?
Yes.
Some of those things are, and this might seem obvious to people, but you may not have heard it, is a reduction in breast cancer rates. And we don't know the exact mechanism as to why that is, but we do know that, regular movement and lymphatic flow and drainage of the breast is really important in prevention of breast cancer. And you're certainly getting a lot of that if you're lactating, especially if you're nursing, because baby's hands are all over. So that is really great. But also, probably has a lot to do with just the changes that your breasts go through as well. It's protective of osteoporosis later on in life. It's protective of ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, possibly some other reproductive cancers. There's still a lot of ongoing research in these areas too. So it takes time to really get a solid study where we can truly isolate one thing as being, that catalyst or that cause of a benefit. We don't just want to see a correlation necessarily, but if we're seeing it across a population, we can say yes. It's protective of postpartum depression. That's huge. The hormones involved in lactation really do have a lot to do with your mood and your energy levels and your mental focus and all of those things. So if it's dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, all of those things, they're involved. Those are pathways that are part of lactation. I'm trying to think of what else. People always like to think of weight loss as one, and it's not. I wouldn't really peg that as a benefit. Everybody's different. There's a lot of factors there, but there are protective benefits for insulin resistance and diabetes for the mom as well as the baby. I'm trying to think. There's more. It is protective, I think, of other types of cancer as well besides reproductive cancers, but I don't remember which one specifically off the top of my head. So there's quite a bit there that I would say those are already some really huge benefits. The other cool thing is that it helps you kind of, get through some initial postpartum healing. Every time you have a release of milk from your breasts, that's called the milk ejection reflex. And when that happens, oxytocin is released not just in your breasts, but also in your uterus. And that helps it contract back to that normal pre-pregnancy size. So someone who's lactating and removing milk is going to get there faster than someone who decided, I don't want to do that at all. So there's other things like that that are, kind of immediate. There's other long-term, chronic things that it can benefit as well. So I think it's amazing. I think we really truly don't know all of the benefits of breastfeeding and human milk, but what we do know is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I love that. And, kind of like going back to your, at the beginning of like, this is the way that like mammals are supposed to be feeding their babies. And I just think it's so cool that like our bodies are, by doing what nature like designed us to do or however you believe we came to be, is it's like, there's a built-in mechanism to like keep mom healthy too. And I just love that so much. I know we talked about it, just mentioning it, but while we're here talking about the benefits of breastfeeding, can you just share a little bit about the breastfeeding benefits for baby in case people are, learning about nursing and why maybe they are the first in their family to breastfeed and why would they instead of doing formula since that can be so convenient and all the things?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll preface it too by saying that if there is some reason why breastfeeding is not in the cards for you, or just is something that is so incredibly difficult that, you just have to make that choice that it's not something you're going to be able to do. I don't want anybody to feel like, oh no, my baby is doomed and I'm doomed. And, this is just a horrible, horrible thing. And I have so much guilt over it and all of that. I would say there's no real reason for you to feel that way. When I share about the benefits and all of those things, you know, they are real. You know, the science is there, and it continually is proven time and time again. But that being said, you're not ruining your baby. You're not a bad mom if for some reason this is not something that's going to work out for you and your baby. So really, truly, I believe that. I see that all the time. Babies who are fed formula go on to live great, healthy lives. So, you know, the other thing I'll say about that too is that, you know, it's not that it doesn't make any difference, but certainly socioeconomic status has a lot to do with the outcomes and differences between breast milk and formula. So the better off you are socioeconomically, you know, if your baby is fed formula versus breast milk, there's less of a disparity. And that's just kind of the way it is. So just sharing that for anybody, because I don't want anyone to have mom guilt. But let's talk about benefits for baby, because it's so exciting. We do know a lot of these, which is really cool. So
just to dive in off, like on that disclaimer is, I totally agree with you. There's no shame. There's no guilt, all of the things. The reason part of me was like, should we skip this? But I just think I just think it's actually important for people to understand, like, you know, regardless of fed is best or breast is best and all of those things, is it's like, nobody says those things to make you feel bad. It's literally like, for me, if you understand why people say those things, you know, you might actually find a way to breastfeed until 6 weeks, or sorry, maybe 6 weeks, even if you weren't going to, you know, but you know, if you would know like that, your chances of ovarian cancer go down, you know, for breastfeeding for 6 months, you know, that might be what you hold on to. Or, you know, if you know that if you nurse your baby until 12 months, this, you know, like I just love getting the information out to women and couples and so that they can make the right decision, because, if you don't know, then you just don't know. And then, you know, you'll deal with the guilt and shame later or whatever. So, all that to say, take the information as you wish. And, you know, if it works, great. If it doesn't, just leave it behind. And, you know, maybe it'll come back with the next pregnancy or whatever, but absolutely no guilt or shame in any of this.
Oh, I love that you said that. Yes, I totally agree. And I think, honestly, more than anything, knowing these things about the benefits of breastfeeding and breast milk can be those things that motivate you when you're not sure you want to keep going.
Yeah, totally.
You're like, oh my gosh, I have had no sleep and this baby wakes up every hour. Why am I doing this? And they're like, well,
yes.
I can limit my chances of cancer and all these things. So we'll talk about baby.
Yes, let's talk about baby first. And then I do want to come back to that in a second.
Yeah. So, oh my gosh, where do we start? You know, people that, you know, for whom breastfeeding did not work out and they feel guilt or shame often, you know, try to say that this stuff isn't true, but it is. It's absolutely validated by really, really good science. You know, breast milk unequivocally, yes, it absolutely does, you know, promote a higher IQ in infants. You know, so that's something that is, you know, through their lifespan, right? Most of these benefits you'll learn about are through their lifespan. It prevents, you know, certain types of leukemia and other cancers as well. If you didn't know this, you know, breast milk, you know, I think it's important to think of it this way. It's a living tissue. It's literally just full of cells and other biological components. Yes, there are carbs and fats and proteins. And yes, there is a ton of water in there. But really, all these other biological bioactive components, they're live. They are made on demand from your boobs. Like, it's the coolest thing ever. And if we think of it as, you know, this living tissue, then we can see why are there so many benefits to it, right? Formula, there's nothing alive in formula and there never was. So we have to think of that really as a food. Breast milk really isn't a food. You know, it's this living substance that we're able to convey to our babies. So it's full of stem cells. That's incredible for brain development, for, you know, overall development, healing any sorts of injuries or overcoming other illnesses. That's incredible, right? The balance of nutrients is exactly what your baby needs. And breast milk is never static. So what your baby gets from one nursing or pumping session, they will probably never have that exact same formulation again. So it's really on demand. And this is where I get a question from moms. They're like, well, what if I exclusively pump? Same thing. you hold your baby, right? You probably give them kisses. You probably smell them. You're definitely sharing an environment with them. So the things that you're exposed to, your baby is getting those benefits because your body is learning by virtue of that, what to make for your baby. So here's a really cool thing too about antibodies. Let's say you're exposed to some sort of pathogen where your baby is. And so by virtue of that, you're exposed. Within 4 hours of that initial exposure, your breast milk already has antibodies to that for your baby. How cool is that?
Amazing. It like blows my mind every time because it's it's like, you know, that meme where it's like, I make milk, what's your superpower? And I'm like, I do, I make milk. And it's like literally like the most incredible substance known to humankind.
It really is. Like I'm in awe. We still really don't know all of the components of human milk either. This is something that's always researched, usually by formula companies, because they're trying to, you know, to match it as much as they can. But there's not just antibodies. There's immunoglobulins. There's Hamlet cells, which stands for something that I'm not going to remember how to say, but they're actual, they're like tumor killing cells. That's, they have one specific job, right? So you have all of these immune components, which are incredible. There's probiotic bacteria in there. There's also something called human milk oligosaccharides. And what those are, there's over 200 of them that have been discovered in human milk. They're essentially these insoluble fibers. They're prebiotics. They're carbohydrates that are not digested by your baby's gut, but by the bacteria that lives in your baby's gut. So those oligosaccharides feed that probiotic bacteria in your baby's gut. And probiotic bacteria can create a lot of things. It depends on what strains there are. It could be they manufacture vitamin K in your baby's gut. They could manufacture serotonin. There's so many other things, but they also help that probiotic bacteria proliferate. So yes, they do have a lifespan. They die. We want to make sure that they're reproducing and staying in your baby's gut. So that's also huge. Protective of diabetes, protective of, gosh, asthma. There's so many things. I feel like I'm leaving like a huge list of things off that it prevents. I mean, generally, you know, breastfed babies get over illness quicker and all of those sorts of things as well. The other cool thing is that nursing itself provides mechanical benefits to your baby that are present outside of breast milk. So what I mean by that is just the act of your baby latching and nursing at the breast, that actually guides the development of their craniofacial complex. So generally what we're looking at is really from the eye sockets down. So it's that jaw, it's that airway growth and development. So when your baby's latched onto the breast molds and fits to shape their mouth. It widens their palate. It brings their jaw forward, which gives them a nice open airway. It can affect the growth and development of their eye sockets, which could mean they have astigmatism or not later on in life. So there are benefits for eyesight. So it's preventive of things like snoring and sleep apnea. For those reasons, it would also be preventive of things like ADHD. So there's a lot of downstream effects where we know that breast milk already prevents a lot of things. But then if you're able to nurse your baby, even if it's not full time, even if it's not a full milk supply and you still have to supplement or something like that, those mechanical benefits, posture, reflexes, sensory motor complex, all of those things are sort of integrated into breastfeeding and nursing. Nursing is this thing that your baby does with their whole body, not just with their mouth. So the way you position them when you nurse them at the breast, the way that, you know, they move their jaw and their mouth and their tongue, all of those things matter and contribute to their growth and development that, you know, 90% of craniofacial growth is actually complete by age 2. So in terms of their skull and airway and jaw formation and all of that, a lot of that is happening. And if you guys didn't know this, this was like a huge kerfuffle on the internet, but earlier last year, the American Academy of Pediatrics changed their recommendations to match the World Health Organization's recommendations that breastfeeding is recommended until age 2 and beyond. And it was previously age 1. And the reason for that, the World Health Organization has had this recommendation for a very long time, is really one, that craniofacial growth, right, that's happening up until age 2 years. But also, biologically speaking, for humans, really babies and children, they're meant to nurse at least until age 2. Generally, if everything is going well, no one's intervening in anything, it's very rare for a child under age two to want to self-wean or reject the breast and be ready to stop. So kind of like, you know, if you think of dogs, cats, you know, other mammals, right? There's some time frame that we expect them to nurse with their moms. Humans have a time frame too, and that's actually 2 years.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you went into all of that. And I remembered as soon as you said it, but I had kind of forgotten that the AAP had switched their recommendations. But, and you know, something that a lot of people I feel like don't realize is, you know, what we think of as normal is like just normal in like our society. Like if you look outside of, you know, we're in the US, but like if you look at other countries around the world, some of those women are breastfeeding until like 5 to 7, which of course that like sounds crazy to us because we're used to like less than 12 months for the most part. And, you know, but it's just, that was always just like interesting and like made me more curious of like, why do we only nurse for like up to a year by standards? And like other places are like saying no less than 5, you know? And, but that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all of that.
Yeah. Can I piggyback on that really quick?
Of course.
So I was kind of giving the comparison of like, you know, puppies, right? And so puppies have little puppy teeth. And then those teeth fall out. And commonly they're called milk teeth. And in humans, they used to be called milk teeth too. And if you think about the ages when human children start to lose teeth, usually 5 or 6 at the earliest. So 7 sometimes. And so, like you said, there are people in other cultures that, and even in the US, it does happen. It's just usually not as talked about and happens behind closed doors. But they're very often nursing their children to 5, 6, or 7 as well. And so that coincides with those eruption of adult teeth. And that's really the time that, you know, as I said, biologically speaking, that, you know, we're meant to start that wean, or, you know, you're starting the weaning process before that by introducing solid foods, but you're completing that weaning process at that point.
Yeah. And thank you so much for bringing that up because it's like just continually like blowing my mind, or it just always blows my mind the more I learn about like our body and that, like, you know, that it's just like, this is all actually, there's like kind of this like underlying like divine blueprint for everything. And I say this as like, I truly believe like humans want to help. And like, of course, like it's like from a good place, but it's like, we actually are doing more harm usually, like unintentionally trying to, you know, in the name of help. But like, really, if we just were to like, let nature sort of take its course, it's like, there is actually like this probably like very natural process that would be taking shape. And we're just really, out of touch or disconnected from it. Something that I wanted to, circle back to was like, you were talking about, you know, sometimes it's so hard, like, especially if you're in the middle of the night and you're like, oh my gosh, why am I doing this? And something that our lactation, well, I say our, cause I was like in this amazing like community of mothers, but like of the lactation consultant who I was really close with at the time, she was basically like, do not even bring formula into the house. Like if you know that you want to nurse and like, you really want to breastfeed, like she basically said like, it will be so hard or on those nights that are so hard, it's so easy and tempting to reach for, you know, the formula when really like, if it's the middle of the night, I'm not sure if you'll be texting your lactation consultant, but maybe, but you know, like she was basically, yes. I mean, I think it just depends on your
relationship. We don't respond until we wake up the next morning.
But. Yes. You know, but she was basically like, do not even bring it into the house. And I'm not saying that like, you have to do this. I'm just saying like, if this is like, if you really know that you want to nurse, it's not just going to be like sunshine and rainbows necessarily. And like having that easy outlet is just, it's like really tempting on those hard days. And, you know, she would always say like, don't quit on your hardest day. Like if you want to quit, that's fine. But like, do it from a place where like, you are like actually thoughtful and sincere, not just because you're totally done. I'm just curious if you have thoughts about that or what you would say, you know, as far as like having formula in reach or anything like that.
Yeah, I would say I agree with that advice. You know, generally speaking, because it is tempting. If you have it there and you know it's there and you know it's an option and a really viable option that could be available to you in the next 5 minutes, you're more likely to utilize it. And, you know, most of the time it's unnecessary, right? Like you'll know if you need it or not. And, you know, I try to operate from a place of need. You know, if breastfeeding is not important to you, then, you know, fine, make that switch. But like you're saying, do that from not a place of, you know, make a sound decision, right? Not just a one-off emotional, like, you know, state of overwhelm. And, you know, it can also be too, I've seen a lot of the times that while they're really well-intentioned, your partner may be the one that reaches for that formula because they see you in distress or they see you struggling with things and they think that's helping you. But it could be that first thing that happens to really undermine your ability to successfully breastfeed. And so, you know, for a lot of reasons, I would say it's not a great idea to have it in the home, but another really important one that's timely, but I suspect will kind of be something that continues is, you know, there's been a formula shortage and there are some massive supply chain issues because of contamination with US formula manufacturers. And even though one of those plants reopened after several months, it very quickly shut down again because the contamination issue was different and not fixed. And so our supply chain is really unstable in terms of that, and we can import it from elsewhere. But when people stockpile, when they unnecessarily keep formula in their homes, even if it's just one can, if lots of you are doing that, that limits the supply that people very really need for their babies. And so what happens when you're keeping that can of formula for a maybe or that bottle or whatever, right? Someone else is looking at multiple stores on the shelves for that and they can't get it. So keep that in mind if you're looking for a really good reason. I have been discouraging this for the first reason you mentioned, but now even more so, please do not stockpile formula in the event that you might need it. If you need it, it's available. And there are places to get it. Let me know if you really can't find it, but you can. And, you know, just so that way it's kind of like the whole toilet paper issue at the beginning of COVID, right? Like we just don't, there's already limits in the stores. You can buy just one package. Can. Like, just don't be part of the problem. Okay. But yeah, it's just all too tempting. It really is. And, you know, you might wake up that next morning and go, well, I'm over the hump now, you know, and you'd probably be kicking yourself had you given that bottle of formula and gone, oh, shoot, I really shouldn't have done that. And, oh, do I have to keep giving it? And it just becomes a whole thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I love that you brought that up. And actually the formula shortage, while we're on that topic of just, do you have any insight or tips maybe on like, if people can't find formula or like they're having a hard time nursing, but they still want to, and they're trying to figure out, you know, what's going on or how to get back on track, you know, and they might be looking at like milk from like a milk bank. Do you have any tips on like how to go about finding donor breast milk if formula is like hard to find, or they really still just want to have breast milk or breast milk available for their baby?
Yeah, good question. Like I said, for the most part, you know, even in the worst stages of the formula shortage, you know, you could, you know, drive far enough to a store to find it, right? Like it's still around. May not be the brand you wanted, but it's there. You can also opt in, ask your OB's office to have some of their samples. For some weird reason, formula companies are still delivering those. And I don't know, I feel like they should be on the shelf for people to buy, but like whatever. pediatricians' offices very often have samples. Like if you were in real dire need, those are two really good places. It doesn't even have to be your OB or pediatrician, right? You could just call and say, I desperately need formula. I cannot find any at the local stores. Do you have any samples that you would, you know, give out? Great. You know, like that's an option. You can always contact like your state health department. So I never want people to panic and feel like, oh, I went to one store or two and I didn't find anything. Like it's available and there's ways to get it. So yeah, ask your child's pediatrician. They'll also know. But donor milk is great, right? Donor milk is an incredible option. It's obviously preferred. It's harder to secure. So if we're going to talk about milk banks, you know, not every state in the US has one, not even half the states. And so if your state doesn't have one, it's going to be really difficult for you to secure donor milk. Even if it does have one, it's usually prioritized for hospitalized infants, typically preemies, NICU babies, this and that. So the supply is going to go to them first because for them, human milk is a life or death issue, whereas for your child, it may not be. So if you can't get it, please understand that it's expensive and it's, you know, something that's handled very carefully. Shipping, dry ice, all of that, right? So if there's like a lot that goes into it. So generally speaking, unless your infant's hospitalized, you're probably not going to get it from a milk bank. So your only other option is to get it informally. We call this private arrangement milk sharing. That's kind of like the formal term for it. This is where you go and find a mom. Maybe you know her, maybe you don't, and you ask her for her breast milk. There are lots of really kind-hearted mamas out there who have an oversupply or who have stopped breastfeeding and have stored breast milk, and they would not want to pour that down the drain. They would cry their eyes out after all of that hard work of pumping it, right? They would much rather give it to someone who really needed it and could use it. There are some safety issues to keep in mind with that. And so this is really where like your personal comfort level comes in. It's on you to screen the donor. So the problem that I see a lot of people running into is when you try to screen really heavily, that donor might be like, you know what, that's like way too much work. And I have someone over here who's willing to take the breast milk. So like, you know, if you're saying, I want lab work, I want, you know, a list of medications that you're on, and I want your medical records, like you can certainly ask for those things. Some people have it, they're willing to give it to you. Others might not be. But you get to be as discerning as you'd like to be. The great thing to know about human milk is that it's really not something where very few communicable diseases can be passed on through breast milk. And then you really just want to make sure that somebody has really good safety and hygiene practices, right? Are they washing their hands before they pump and they handle the bags or whatever storage containers, all of that? Are they storing that milk properly? And you know, there's a lot of nuance to that, right? Sometimes you develop like a friendship or a relationship with someone. Maybe it's your sister. Maybe it's a friend you already know. Maybe it's someone in a mom's group. It's totally up to you. One thing to keep in mind is that this is sort of like the etiquette of getting donor milk is you're not paying for the milk. And if anyone is ever charging you for the milk, that's a red flag. And I would definitely stay away. It's probably not even breast milk. So I hate to say it, just do not pay for breast milk. It's really weird when I see that happening. There's been investigations and it's, you know, people have actually tested it in labs. Like it's like flour mixed with water. It's definitely not something you should be feeding your child. So stay away from that. Make sure that it's a trusted source. And then beyond that, like, I would really just say that, you know, take what you can get, right? Even if your baby isn't able to have exclusively breast milk for all of their milk, any amount of breast milk that you're able to provide your child, whether it's yours, whether it's someone else's, is incredible. And some people feel icky about other people's breast milk. Truthfully, this is like something that we've done as humans for a very long time, right? Wet nurses and all of that. So your baby's getting exposed to different antibodies, different immune benefits. It's kind of cool, different food proteins. So there's a lot to consider. I don't want to tell you, you know, blanket, yes, donor milk is amazing. Just screen, make sure you feel comfortable with it before you accept that donation. And then please be a kind recipient and replenish their milk storage bags or pump parts or whatever it is. Because again, you're getting this out of the goodness of someone's heart. So it's nice for you to do that for them.
I love that. Thank you so much. And yeah, just so many good little tips in there. And I cannot believe like flour and water, that is insane.
Yeah, it's scary. And the whole charging for breast milk thing, I think started with like people who are cancer patients or bodybuilders finding out about the benefits. And like, they totally should be paying for it because that's like, we don't owe you that. Right. But
yeah,
it's like, well, you're taking it away from babies. So I'm not sure I'm okay with that either. It's a weird world out there.
I was maybe going to mention this earlier when you were talking, but then, you know, I just had other questions I wanted to get to instead. But, you know, it is funny that you said that about like cancer patients. Is there was a woman who I did, I went to a breastfeeding seminar a long time ago, like maybe in like 2012 or something. And she wasn't like saying like, oh, this is like the way, but her husband had been diagnosed with cancer. And basically she was like, well, this can't hurt, so let's just try this. And all of his tumors had gone down. And like, I don't know how that ended, but I just remember thinking like, gosh, that is so wild. Like our breast milk is so cool. Okay. Just as we start to wrap up, I am going to ask you the same three questions. I kind of end with everybody. If you want to answer them the same, like, or sorry, related to like what we've talked about, that's great. If you want to just go totally rogue and answer from personal experience or whatever, that's great too. Okay. This one is what would you do differently if you could go back and redo your entrance into motherhood with your first? So something you wish you could say to yourself or encourage yourself or anything like that.
Ooh, that's a really good question. It would really be understanding that I don't have to have all the answers at once. And it would also be that I don't have to do everything myself. I really got, and I see a lot of moms doing this, right? And I think it's just kind of the nature of being a woman in today's modern society to some degree, especially a mom, right? That, you know, we take so much on and we forget to offload things. And so I kind of kept like my current plate and then I added to it as opposed to reprioritizing and making some shifts. And so I felt like, oh my gosh, I need to know everything about, you know, child development right now while my baby's an infant so that I can be prepared for the next stage while also learning everything I need to know about having an infant and postpartum and breastfeed. Like, it was all so much. Like, why was I already thinking about preschools and elementary schools? Like, I have a 2-month-old. What's going on? You know? Yeah. And I'm not saying that happens to everybody, but, you know, then on top of that, right? Like, feeling like, okay, yes, I should still be, you know, cooking meals from scratch and keeping up with all of the cleaning or whatever it was that I was doing. Yeah, that was a lot. You know, it's okay to let things go. It's okay to ask for help. Like, I definitely could have asked my mom for help more. I definitely could have leaned on friends more. And I just, you know, had this, I don't know, like this internal thing of, you know, I can do this and no one needs to know any different. And how dare anybody think that I'm not capable of being, you know, the mom that does it all. And it was really, really unhealthy. So I would love to go back to myself and be like, first of all, chill. Second of all, it's like, okay, if you like don't shower today and, you know, just let it go. You might be a more easygoing person than I was and that I am, but that would be really good advice for myself is just, you know, take this time, slow down. It really does go faster than you think. I have a 9 and 6-year-old now. I promise you it goes faster than you think. And I wish that I had spent more time just, you know, really relaxing into early motherhood and I would have enjoyed it a lot more and felt a lot less stressed.
Yes. I love that so much. And honestly could just say like ditto to all of that. What do you wish more women knew before they became mothers?
Oh, wow. Man, a lot of things. There's like kind of something that I would say is like near and dear to my heart, which is that if you have any kind of neurodivergence or mental illness that you were previously not aware of or in denial about, it will become very apparent to you when you become a mom. And not because, you know, of anything other than the fact that, you know, it's a lot. Your brain goes through a lot of changes. This is very well documented in the scientific literature. You basically create all new neural pathways, right? Your hormones, neurotransmitters, like everything is functioning really differently. And so there's this idea that, you know, we've learned about as a society and culture that postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, that those things exist. I would argue that most of the time it's not solely a postpartum issue and that it was always there, but this was maybe the straw that broke the camel's back. And it's okay. Like, so more people than you know struggle with this outside of motherhood and absolutely within it. And you should really listen to yourself and really get help. And maybe your doctor doesn't know, but you're going to have to like just be resourceful and find someone who does, because I think it's one of those things that we just sort of go, oh, well, it's normal to, you know, think about all of these things, like what I was describing. I wish I had let go a little bit more. Yeah. There was also something else going on for me. And I wish that I had known what to look for, you know, how to recognize it, how to ask for help. And I just kept thinking I can do this myself, right? Or, oh, I just have, you know, postpartum anxiety. Well, I didn't have postpartum anxiety. And so, you know, there's a lot of things to those topics. And I certainly can't cover them in this talk. And I'm not a mental health expert by any means. But I would just say that if something is coming up for you and you're struggling mentally and emotionally more than you think other people are, maybe it's because you are, and that's okay. And it doesn't mean anything's wrong with you. It just means that you might need to learn more about yourself and get some additional support.
I love that. That might be one of, if not, it's definitely one of the top 3 favorite answers so far. That was so good. Okay. What is one way you would encourage or recommend spouses to get involved to better support her through her transition into motherhood?
Yeah, so good. There are some definite differences between men and women. And generally speaking, not everybody is this way, but men typically like to provide solutions. They also like to be the protectors, right? Especially, you know, now they're a dad, like, you know, they feel this responsibility and, you know, they're the, you know, person who kind of takes care of everybody sometimes. And when that happens, they can offer solutions that maybe you didn't ask for. Maybe you didn't want a solution presented at all. You just wanted to talk about what's going on and you needed to just communicate and feel heard and all of that. So, you know, if you're a partner of a breastfeeding mom, your job is to listen and to validate. And unless she is specifically asking you for solutions, please don't offer them. Be there to just hold space, to really like acknowledge all the things that she's feeling and thinking. Try to read between the lines about, you know, if she's making a complaint, what's really the underlying feeling that might be behind that complaint? Is it overwhelm? Does she not feel like you're supporting her enough? Constantly be thinking about what could I do and ask her. Don't assume. Ask, what can I do to support you more? Are you feeling like I'm supporting you enough? Those questions could be the biggest sigh of relief for your partner. Like, she could literally be like, that's all I wanted to hear. You know, the fact that you're even thinking, am I supporting her in the right ways, in the ways that she needs, in the ways that she's asking me for? Is there something she is feeling like she can't ask me for that she should be? Like, have those conversations and just ask a lot of questions, be there to listen, be there to support her. And the other thing I'll say too, is that, you know, really try to balance things equally. Like, you know, if you have, you know, the female partner in your life, she's staying home from work for, you know, either maternity leave or forever, whatever it is, don't make the assumption that all of the home duties fall on her. They don't. Okay. Like, you're also at home too. And I hate that I have to say this, but it is something that I still see is a somewhat common mentality. So, you know, be there to pick up the pieces. Like, no, the house is not going to be as clean as it used to be, or, you know, there won't be a fresh, like, home cooked meal all of the time. It's okay. Like, pick up something ready-made at Costco and go for it. That's what I would say.
Yes. I love it. And I love that you brought back food, because, you know, when you were first answering, I was like, just offer her some water and some food. And like, yes, that can solve a lot of problems. Yeah. All the time. She just needs water and like liquids and food near her all the time, and some chapstick. But
chapstick. Yes, it's so true. Which, if you use nipple cream, it makes a great chapstick, by the way. So it's a 2-for-1.
Perfect. That's great. Thank you so much for being here. It's been so lovely to chat, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Did you know most moms stop breastfeeding in the first month postpartum? I believe succeeding at breastfeeding means having the right mindset. In fact, studies show that the number one factor that determines breastfeeding success is commitment, which is why I've created my incredible audio download of breastfeeding affirmations, where I give you actionable mantras so you can breastfeed your baby with confidence and peace of mind. And best of all, it's free. To get access to this audio and PDF, simply visit holisticlactation.com/mantras, and you can get started right now.